what is your reward for being a poet?
That's hard to articulate, isn't it? My reward from writing poetry has to do with the total trust in language to produce something new and surprising. Mm-hmm. Writers of literature and professors of literature, we all know the beautiful ways a text can proliferate, you know, all of the gorgeous meanings and the different theoretical paradigms we bring to them, and then all of the structural and technical things that we find and celebrate in them. And some people, you know, move toward fiction, some move toward drama and memoir for the structural mm-hmm. advantages inherent in each. But for me, poetry has a density and a complexity of language, a reliance on the metaphoric imagination that the other ones don't seem to invite or invite as robustly. Mm-hmm. I love language. Mm-hmm. And poetry, the economy of any single successful poem never seems to forget how mm-hmm. very much language can achieve. It's not just about meaning and voice and mm-hmm. character and symbol and so on. Mm-hmm. It's about language itself. Mm-hmm. And I'm deeply attracted to that. And when I move into other genres these days, now writing memoir and fiction, mm-hmm. that's what I bring with me.
Mm-hmm. So you can write in the other genres as a poet, I mean, using that sensibility.
I think so. Or at least, I don't know, I mean, maybe it's just that I was so limited for so long in my own understanding of my skill set, mm-hmm. and maybe I was so limited in this genre box mm-hmm. that I just didn't learn enough of the joys mm-hmm. that the other disciplines offer. I'm a creature of habit, and I love what I know. And so I take some of the things that I know, and that's what makes me love memoir, that's what makes me love fiction now, that I can apply these things in some fresh ways mm-hmm. to these other genres.
Well, also the idea of going home again, what's the question? Just rediscovering in an immediate way your community which you grew up in. Mm. I mean, that I believe that what we grow up in affects us. And, you know, if you're born in Afghanistan, you're going to like Afghanistan. If you're born in Canada, you'll like Canada, just because we get used to it. Mm-hmm. Is that the way you feel about the community you grew up in?
No, it isn't. Mm-hmm. And I spent, you know, 15 years in the Mennonite community, the first 15 years, those formative years. Mm-hmm. But I think any growing up that I did was actually after that. Uh-huh. Yeah. I love that community. Like, I was always aware that this is a community where the dangerous, scary things of the world didn't really penetrate. Mm-hmm. So the serial killers in their unmarked white vans that were hovering around the community, I felt sure that they were all there trying to take advantage of the girls, you know. Mm-hmm. I felt safe and sacrosanct in this community. And I could see, for example, that marriages in the Mennonite community seemed stable mm-hmm. and monogamous and intentional. Mm-hmm. And I could see that families were tight and that there was support and that people loved each other. I could see that people wanted to go to church potlucks, even though I couldn't imagine why. Mm-hmm. I could see it. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And those were things that I knew I was lucky to be seeing. Mm-hmm. But they didn't feed me in any real way. And in many ways, they became the very things I wanted to set aside as mm-hmm. I moved forward. Mm-hmm.
Do you feel in retrospect that your early years being and a very definite community point of view, I'm assuming there's some benefits and some burdens from that.
Benefits and burdens, sure. And lots of practical benefits that now I'm just so glad I have. The basic things like cooking and sewing and quilting and butchering and candle making, and, you know, you drop me in the middle of a mm-hmm. desert island, I'm pretty sure I could kick desert island ass. So all of those things are in place for me. The other values, spiritual values and communal values and character values, like, for instance, my parents' notion that we are richly responsible for our own happiness. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. it prevents that victim shtick that happens so much as a part of contemporary culture. It just shuts it down. And you just don't really see that in the Mennonite community, at least the one in which I grew up. So really lovely values like that have prospered me, I think. And I have held them more and more dearly as I've gotten older. And then some of the negative values, I think any woman going through academia today would look back on some of that and raise her eyebrows about some of the gender stuff that was in place, the old patriarchal stuff.
Is that changing at all?
It is changing, and it was actually beginning to change. Well, it was changing even when I was a child, when I was growing up. It wasn't changing fast enough to suit me, and I had that impatience of young scholars who would just want everything instantly changed, and if it's not going to change, they're going to immediately turn around and walk away to some place that has already changed. So it is beginning to change. There are still some areas, I think, where theologically I might part company with the position of some of the Mennonite churches. And then probably more areas in which I would support what they believe. Like, I would position myself today as a pacifist and someone who's interested in nonviolent resistance. And that, of course, is one of their central organizing tenets.
So what happened when you moved out of that and went to college or whatever?
I think the usual thing that happens, you know, kids testing their power, kids beginning to suspect their skill set and moving violently and unwisely toward it at too furious a pace. I married an atheist, and that was quite formative in how I structured my next 20 years. And he was not just an atheist, he was an angry atheist who directed a lot of animosity toward organized religion. And he was very insightful, just gorgeously astute. And so his critical spirit, combined with my own critical spirit, we created a third critical spirit between us. It was a really critical marriage. And that shaped a lot of non-participatory judgment to my community of origin for many years. So much so that I didn't even go back very often.
Did that create a schism between you and your parents or
no,
friends?
Which I think is a testament to their maturity and their ability to walk in love no matter what. I think I probably said and did some things that were pretty appalling, and they never made me feel in love. They were always really cool.
That's big.
It's big. I remember when I called my mom to tell her I can't remember if I wrote this in the book, so you can edit it out if it seems repetitive, but when I was calling my mom to tell her I had met this guy and we were marrying, you know, we were engaged now two months after we had met. Her response, Rhoda, have you been drinking?
Whoa.
That was her first response. And I knew even through that response that she would be loving and she would offer to make that wedding happen. And in fact, she helped me make my wedding gown. She was lovely. Even though I'm sure that she and my father were sitting there going, this is a catastrophic decision for our daughter and this isn't the husband for her.
Well, it sounds like your parents have reached a level of maturity that perhaps we all aspire to.
I aspire to it. I learn from them all the time. Every time I'm there now, I see something that I want.